Hey, everybody. Before we get into the show, I wanted to let you know we've got another live show coming up. We will be back at Maya Cinemas on Thursday, May 23rd for Furiosa, the latest in the Mad Max series. We are so excited for this one. Joining me to talk about it, we've got Sam Novak, Shahab Zargari, and Tony Gonzalez. A great lineup. It's going to be an awesome movie. We are so excited to talk about it. So make sure to check the show notes. There are opportunities to win tickets. You can also buy tickets, and we hope to see you there Thursday, May 23rd, 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas for Furiosa. Episode 9 of Piecing It Together. Here we go. We got a lot of great feedback on that last one, the Bus Party to Hell. Thank you so much, everyone that's been out there listening and subscribing and reviewing the show. Please, if you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe to the show. We want to make sure that you keep getting these episodes, and we want to keep getting feedback. So please keep on emailing us, leaving comments, leaving reviews. We want to know what you're thinking. We want to respond to your comments and all that. So thank you again for listening. And today we've got a really cool one. This is going to be the first time we've had my friend Chris Cranock on the show. And we are doing the movie Isle of Dogs. Isle of Dogs is a stop-motion animated adventure from Wes Anderson. Me being a dog guy and a stop-motion animation guy and a Wes Anderson guy, it's kind of a dream come true. Luckily, it's pretty great, too. With the voices of Bill Murray, Bryan Cranston, Frances McDormand, Yoko Ono, and many, many, many more, it's a unique film in which a pack of formerly housebroken dogs who have been exiled to Trash Island off the coast of Japan team up with a 12-year-old boy to find his lost dog. The stop-motion animals are all beautifully rendered, and it's a quirky, fun story filled with lots of laughs, adventure, heart, and a lot of Wes Anderson. All right, so we are here doing another episode of Piecing It Together. And with me for the first time, I've got Chris Cranock to talk about Isle of Dogs. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing very well. How's it going, man?
I am doing all right. You are one of the first people I wanted to be on this show back when I first started, you know, talking about doing it. And I think this is a cool one to do, even though I think we're going to have a little difference of opinion based on our Facebook chats.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah. Difference of opinion. That makes it more interesting.
Absolutely.
But I appreciate that you wanted me on, so thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely, man.
It's an honor.
So, yeah, this, obviously, being a Wes Anderson movie, it's a thing, you know? A Wes Anderson movie is a thing. And he kind of is someone who, you know, wears his inspirations right on his sleeve. So,
yes,
you know, it's pretty obvious going in that you're going to be able to see those kind of things. And I think for someone like him, you know, I'm putting an assumption here. And I kind of told you this earlier when we were just chatting before we started, but a little assumption. I think you'll kind of have a little more insight than I will on this particular episode, but
maybe.
That's fine. That's okay. If not, don't mean to put you on the spot or anything.
No. I know nothing about the man.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I know a decent amount.
You know, not a damn thing, huh?
Right, yeah.
So, but yeah, no, with that, I mean, I think I'm going to let you jump in first with your first puzzle piece. What do you think inspired this particular brand of Wes Anderson?
Oh, well, I mean, the first thing, widely kind of obvious, but Japanese cinema is the big one, is the giveaway. But more specifically, probably like the work of Akira Kurosawa and and Ozu, which is one of my favorite Japanese filmmakers as well, that the whole film kind of felt like an ode to those films.
Mm-hmm.
And not such a subtle way as part of the thing. I mean, I know that's his shtick, and that's good, but that's one of the things like... that's my point of contention with him usually, is that I wish a lot of filmmakers I admire transcend their influences.
Right.
But you can see him in there, of course. But when you go to a Wes Anderson film, sometimes it feels like you're just watching his version of something else.
Right.
And yet, and that's a kind of a controversial statement, too, because he's also extremely unique, and you could recognize his work immediately. So yeah, I don't know, his use of Japanese cinema, particularly Akira Kurosawa, not a very original comment. A lot of people are making that comment,
right?
But that'd be the first thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, definitely without even knowing his work, I mean, I just kind of, you right. know, I'm like, you know, there's probably an Akira Kurosawa that he's referencing, I'm sure. But
well, it's funny. I mean, Akira Kurosawa is such a huge influence over all of Japanese cinema that it is something that even like anyone that isn't too familiar with that part of the world in movies can sense it, can feel it. Mm-hmm. And that filmmaker is also one of the most like westernized Japanese filmmakers, which is interesting. Someone like Ozu was actually very uniquely Japanese. So at first his films didn't really reach a wide audience because they didn't think they would do well in the West, but in reality they did quite well. But yeah, Akira Kurosawa is closely linked to someone like John Ford doing Westerns. The samurai films were heavily influenced by Westerns, and then later on Westerns were heavily influenced by Japanese cinema. Mm. So yeah, it's stuff that we recognize instantly, almost in an intuitive level.
Right, yeah, there's a lot of back and forth, inspiration going on between all those different things. And so, you know, then it eventually makes its way to someone like Wes Anderson in a stop motion film about dogs. So
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a strange thing, really, because what a bizarre combination of things to do, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, I mean, the movie worked for me on a visual level, of course.
Sure.
It's an extremely beautiful movie, and you can never deny that. But there's something that, as his films have progressed, Wes Anderson's, that is that there's kind of a sterile quality to them.
Mm.
And I think that the reference of Japanese cinema, I don't know if it really lended itself well to the film overall. I felt
right.
a little on the outside of it, looking in a little.
See, I did like it. And I especially like the different styles of Japanese culture that they use in like different scenes, like when they're on the TV, they're showing more of a anime cartoon style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then, you know, like there's like a lot of different, it's like almost like just this big smorgasbord of all things celebrating, you know, all things Japan, I guess. It kind of depends on how you look at it, whether or not it's celebrating or just ripping off. And I kind of look at it more as a celebration.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I definitely have seen a lot of comments about where he's trying to go with it. And
yeah, well, the thing is, you have to be careful too, because you should always look at a movie based on its own merits.
Right.
And sometimes it's easy. And I do this, is sometimes you always judge every movie based upon the entire person's catalog.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you gotta be careful with that. Like, I think there's some validity there. You can definitely make a case for seeing his work as a complete, as a whole.
Yeah.
And then, because there are very indiscriminate Wes Anderson fans that will just watch anything and doesn't matter what he does and they love it.
Yeah.
And I'm just not that way with any filmmaker. I don't know if it's because I'm a filmmaker. I don't know if I'm more keenly or trying to be more keenly objective about certain movies.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? But I don't know. I feel like, as I see his entire catalog, I want him to be more fresh and original because I like him. I think he's a great, I'm more critical of talented people I really like than I would be of Transformers 10.
Right.
Cause I don't care. Who cares if that movie's not any good? It's, you know, made to go make money and
yeah,
that's fine.
I fully understand
that.
Yeah. I am somebody who, when I love a certain filmmaker, I mean, I am super excited for every single thing they do, and I'll eat up every single thing they do. But at the same time, I will absolutely be honest with if I'm disappointed by it.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm not going to just let that cloud my judgment after the fact, you know?
Right.
Moonrise Kingdom is specifically a Wes Anderson movie that I just stared at the screen for 90 minutes and
yeah.
I was like, I don't know what's happening here. I don't like this.
Well, this is just an assumption. We don't really know how much they're no longer involved. But I think once the Wilson brothers kind of left the scene,
yeah,
I felt like it was a big drop off. Like, I was a big fan of Rushmore. It was an important film to me in my life. I think
mm-hmm.
in the independent world, it was important. It was extremely fresh and original and excellent. I really enjoyed it. And then Royal Tenenbaums was, I think, objectively maybe his best films.
Yeah.
One of his best films. And then after that, it just really started going hit and miss for me. And I was really not a fan of Life Aquatic, which, again, I know it's probably many of your listeners is sacrilege.
Right, right.
But no good. No good.
What did you think of Grand Budapest? Hotel?
It's again a very beautiful movie, but it's become, they slowly became more and more cartoonish. The irony of that he's getting into stop motion, doing his second stop motion film,
right,
is that all his live action films almost starting, they almost start to feel like they're crossing into a fantastical cartoon like world.
Yeah.
And they lack a substance for me. You know, I think there's a lot of real sincerity and substance in films like Rushmore and Royal Tenenbaums. And then it also complemented his style so beautifully. They kind of worked in tandem together.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the films progressed, for me anyway, they've become much more stylized.
Yeah.
And definitely. A lot of that kind of sincerity and spirit has kind of withered away. It's become more about style than substance. So.
Well, that's a really great transition into my first puzzle piece here, which is actually something that I described this movie as to a couple of friends, is Saturday morning cartoons by way of Wes Anderson, which...
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It very much felt like every Saturday morning cartoon that I loved as a kid. I mean, it had those, like those gags and the silliness, and of course, you know, the talking animals and, you know, you know, it was still weird. It still had that, you know, that Wes Anderson dark comedy to it. But I also felt like it was kind of his most straightforward comedy at same time, you know.
Yeah.
His movies are always funny, but, you know, this one, I was in a surprisingly crowded theater. I don't normally see that many people out for that kind of a filmmaker. But, but yeah, I mean, everyone was cracking up and really loving it.
See, and that surprises me too, because again, maybe this is the minority opinion, but I thought it was like his least funny movie.
That's funny.
Yeah, I didn't laugh. And I don't know if it's because it was so straightforward. Usually there's it was kind of a simple movie. I know it's intended in part for children, but I thought that like a Fantastic Mr. Fox, which I know you're not a huge fan of.
Yeah,
right?
No, it's probably my second
least
to least
after Moonrise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I actually enjoyed Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I did like Mr. Fantastic Fox, Fantastic Mr. Fox, though. But yeah, definitely didn't love it.
Yeah, it was that thing. There was more, and that's the thing is, I've actually asked myself this question. I thought to myself, why does Fantastic Mr. Fox work, and maybe then Life Aquatic doesn't for me?
Mm-hmm.
Or, and I, you know, it's funny. I had a change of heart about Darjeeling Limited. That was a movie that I kind of wrote off, and I think unfairly. I don't know why I did. I just didn't connect with it or something. But then I revisited it, and it was like, oh wow, this is good. You know, I really enjoyed it. So I don't know why some work and some don't. I've thought about that. But for Fantastic Mr. Fox, there seemed to have that kind of depth that was kind of beneath the surface. And then with Isle of Dogs, it felt particularly like a children's movie in the sense that it was, you know, kind of simple, hollow.
Well, important question here: do you love dogs?
I love dogs in general, and I also love my own dog more than anything on the planet.
Okay.
I'm planning a ritualistic suicide once he dies.
It's a good idea.
I can't go on living.
I think that's probably the best for all of us.
Really?
You know? Yeah. Myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
but no, I was going to say, because that's, to me, this movie, I thought, really captured a lot of that quirkiness of dogs, which is part of what I liked about it so much.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I didn't really think so.
Well, quirkiness of dogs, yes. But there's a kind of a base sentimentality to the movie where I don't know if you noticed, but like 85% of the movie, everyone's eyes were watering
up. The teary eyes.
And it started to kind of bother. It got annoying because I thought, you know, because the thing is like you're injecting sentimentality into something that isn't really being earned. I don't really feel connected.
Yeah.
Besides the idea that I like dogs, which is, I think, is a given for most audience members. I think it's kind of a cheap way to connect us to your story.
They got me 100% hook, line, and sinker.
The little dog that didn't have many lines. I forgot who voiced the dog, but they were adorable. Don't get me wrong. I mean, one of the things that I'd mention is that the movie was stunningly beautiful and adorable.
Yeah.
And, but maybe I'm just a cynical, mean old person.
You
but bastard. Maybe I'm just an asshole, but, no, but I mean, yeah, love dogs. I connect with animals and it was really fun to watch them be so cute.
Yeah.
And even the character, the human characters are very cute.
Yeah,
little
for sure.
Pilot and all that. Very nice.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't enough to hook me in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, man, we need to get some Claritin in this universe because people are tearing up.
So what would your next puzzle piece be?
I actually thought about that. Probably the, I mean, the world of Japanese animation, by mm-hmm. and large, not only anime, but a lot of the great, you know, Howl's Moving Castle and mm-hmm. a lot of those, you know, from those that great. That's probably something that I'd see as a big influence, probably just in its, not only in its visual presence, you know, the movie's very visually stunning, as we've mentioned, but also to like how the characters move within the world and things like that. It kind of had that classical animation feel, sure. even though it had a, even though it was stop motion as opposed to standard animation, which is a feat unto itself. It's amazing sure. these movies being made. So that's a really amazing thing. But yeah, I felt like traditional Japanese cinema and the stuff that me and you probably have grown up seeing was a big influence.
Did you have any other specific Japanese animation films other than Howl's Moving Castle?
Is that Moving Castle? I mean, Spirited Away, of course. That's mm-hmm. probably the biggest one, even more so than Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah.
I think I love Spirited Away. It's a beautiful film. Really enjoy it. But I have kind of a tender spot for Howl's Moving Castle.
Right.
I don't know why that is. And that kind of popped to mind. But yeah, if I had to really think about it, Spirited Away
right
would
on.
Be the big one.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, my next one here... is a very surface level one, but I think it definitely works, and that's The Jungle Book.
Okay.
Which, you know, the boy lost with animals and adventure, you know what I
yeah.
mean? You know, this is different. Of course, you can't understand animals. There's the whole the lack of communication between them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, still, I think this is kind of a more warped version of that,
yeah.
but definitely I think I see that kind of story, that kind of adventure being mm-hmm. explored here.
Okay.
Just by way of like a Wes Anderson type director, you know,
right? Yeah, so. Put in his whole stylistic world,
exactly.
The front facing, long depth camera shot, wherever we're
yeah.
looking to the side, yeah, that whole thing.
Yeah,
yeah, the monotone voices.
Uh-huh. you know? Oh yeah, absolutely.
yeah,
yeah, the design, the meticulous design, the all the like the weird little quirks that go along with it, you know, which
yeah.
it was. Pretty damn quirky. This one, yeah, all the little things. You
it
know?
Was, yeah,
yeah.
That's the thing is, I feel like that style, not to sound overly repetitive, but I feel like it's like almost working. It's almost like we're becoming, as an audience, less crucial to the experience. the style is so precise.
Yeah.
And in a sense, repetitive. I feel like I'm starting to anticipate this.
Mm-hmm.
I know what to expect with a Wes Anderson movie.
Sure.
Which takes a little bit of the magic out of it. You know, I mean, it's like, how many times can we watch this one particular thing? But yeah, I think we're almost becoming less crucial to the experience.
yeah, that's an interesting point, because I mean, it's pretty clear, especially someone like Wes Anderson, these are his own exercises in what he wants to see. I mean, he's
sure.
such a designer of the scene of
yeah.
of everything that's happening on the screen. And you know, it's a good question about whether or not he's doing this for the audience or for himself, for his
right.
own
right. Sure. Yeah.
for his own like idea of what should be on screen.
Well, that's a really actually a fascinating topic to even talk about, because I believe an artist should do what they'd like for themselves. You can't always anticipate, you know, what the audience will like or what
mm-hmm.
you know, it's quickly turns into pandering to your audience. So I really feel like, you know, the Hitchcock approach, pardon me, is a healthy one, I think, which is that he did things that scared him,
mm-hmm.
but he had the understanding that he wasn't that unique.
Yeah.
So you have this, instead of it becoming mediocre, instead of it kind of being the lowest common denominator for the largest audience, it ended up being deeply personal.
Mm-hmm.
But then all those deep personal fears had some kind of universal connection to the audience.
Sure.
And so it's a really, I mean, so yeah, it's tough. I think it's a filmmaker by filmmaker basis. It's a style by style thing.
Yeah.
And maybe it works for some people than others. I saw it with a friend of mine, Marcy, and Marcy loves Wes Anderson, and she cried and she laughed and she had this very emotional experience. And I felt like I had just read the back of a cereal box. You know, I was like, how am I having that experience? You're wiping tears from your eyes.
Should I add a back of cereal box to the list of influences?
Yeah, or? Maybe yeah. I think back of cereal box. Yeah. Cardboard wooden. Yeah. With like a cute dog prize inside.
Hey, who doesn't love Tony the Tiger and Boo Berry?
They're
all
great.
You know, great characters, deep characters.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. And Count Chocula was a favorite growing up.
Oh, yeah.
But, but that's the thing. You got to strike that balance. Yeah. You know, I want to make films that appeal to an audience, of course, but I don't want to pander and have them anticipate what I'm going to do for them. I want to still surprise them.
Sure.
So I think there has to be a certain uniform, you know, personal, you can't really think about the audience and yet at the same time try to make something that connects people.
Sure.
And I'm sure he does that. I don't think he deliberately wants to keep us out.
Right.
That's the thing, is that it's not Machiavellian that he doesn't want his audience members to understand his movie or anything. I think he really intends them to be emotional experiences, but sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. I mean, maybe when he's, you know, spending so much time on doing the Wes Anderson thing, it's right. not spending so, you know, enough right. time on
yeah.
on the audience specifically.
Right. I heard a brilliant quote one time from Lou Reed, one of my heroes just in general, but also my musical heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And he said in the 70s, he was writing and he said to himself, oh, I wonder if this is something Lou Reed would write. And then eventually he realized that, well, if I wrote it, it's something I would write.
You're right.
So I think you should, I took that to heart. That was a really, I think, profound realization that, yeah, you're allowed to go down these, you're allowed to change.
Yeah.
And it can still be something you would do. You know, I mean, you can never escape yourself, really.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and when it comes to Wes, here's the thing, this is all personal. I think people listening to this, remember, this guy is just up, yeah, just up his own ass.
That's fine.
And I kind of am, so I'll just admit to that.
No,
but
it's
the
okay.
But, you know.
Hey, I'm the one that started a podcast.
Okay, true. Okay. But the thing is, you know, sometimes, and this isn't, he's not the only one. You know, someone like even like Paul Thomas Anderson, the Andersons.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm watching like what they're into at the moment.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like when I saw Darjeeling, the first instinct I had was like, oh, well, this is like his Indian art film period.
Yeah.
And then I saw Life Aquatic, and this was his Italian film period.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, when someone's super crazy talented, like those guys are, they're geniuses. And I really mean that.
Yeah.
I think they're geniuses. I want them to give me more. I want them to be better. I don't want to go like, oh, well, I've seen that movie. You know, it's like, There Will Be Blood is The Shining with milkshakes. You know what I mean? And it's like, and I can't unsee that. And it's like, be better, man.
Right.
But I will say I love Phantom Thread. So.
Okay.
And that's just Hitchcock's Rebecca.
Yeah.
That's just Rebecca. But it works.
Yeah.
So I don't have any rhyme or reason to my criticism.
Right.
Sometimes it works. Sometimes it
doesn't.
If
it works, it works.
Yeah.
And when it works, it works.
If I like it, I like it.
Yeah.
And that's the only like rhythm I have to any of this.
Do you have another puzzle piece to add to this?
Yeah, there's actually a Akira Kurosawa film in particular called Deskaden, which it's a made up word. So if I butchered the pronunciation of that, I care less than if it was an actual Japanese word.
Okay.
But Deskaden, I believe that's proper. But it's about a family and about people that live in a trash heap in Japan. So it's basically the story of Isle of Dogs minus as many dogs.
Yeah.
It's almost identical, really. And so it's very colorful and very whimsical. It's probably Akira Kurosawa's most like entertaining film in a traditional sense. He made a lot of very entertaining films, but in a very traditional sense, like it's exactly the premise of Isle of Dogs, essentially.
Interesting.
So that one was the big one. When I watched it, I was like, oh, okay, I know what he watched on Thursday.
Right.
That's how I felt. I was like, the Thursday prior to writing the script, I should say.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's interesting. That's the one, like, so far that's like, damn, I should watch that. Like, you know what I mean? I should watch that and see the, see the comparison there.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I just watched today, this is funny, interestingly enough, not to be too off topic, but I watched Heat, the Michael Mann movie.
Yeah.
And I hadn't watched it in years. And I'm a big fan of Chris Nolan's The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of that movie. I think it's a great movie. And I just couldn't believe that Dark Knight is essentially Heat with Batman in it.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
But a lot. Like,
yeah.
By the editing pace, the camera angles, the position of the camera, the music.
I haven't seen Heat in a long time, but even like the color tone.
The color
right?
tone.
Yeah.
It's like Batman. It's like Batman's in Heat. That's what we should have called The Dark Knight.
Batman in Heat would be a different movie.
A very horny Batman. Yeah. It's kind of a But I couldn't believe it. I was agog.
Yeah.
Because it's the same movie. And I was blown away.
That is really
funny. I think it's like, hey, listen, I have influences that I copy and mimic. I mean, where they say amateurs borrow and professionals steal.
Right.
Now, these are great. Yeah, and it's all true. We all, you know, we're all like the flower of these people, this people's manure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We all owe a deep credit to them. But for me personally, I try to hold myself to a big standard, which is like, what's best for my story? And then I don't want to deliberately reference anybody. It will be in there.
Right.
I mean, I can't get away from the fact that I'm made up of these other people.
Sure.
So exactly. It's going to be right in there.
Yeah.
So I try to really not deliberately copy them or even do like a reference to them, because one, it's something that's like, it irritates me. And two, I think I'm doing my story a disservice.
Right.
And three, it will already be there in there anyway.
Yeah.
You mean, I'm basically always making 8.5 by Fellini or The Shining over and over again. I don't know if I'll ever break that cycle, but that's kind of like what I'm always doing, I think. So yeah, it's just in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely a sensitive subject for me, like even on a personal level, because I combat that urge to go off and do the things that I've been inspired by and seen. You know.
By the way, somebody reviewed this show on iTunes and they used that quote. What is it? Amateurs borrow, professional steal.
Yeah,
someone used that quote.
About you?
About like the concept, like about influences and movies and stuff.
Oh, what is this? What are you influenced by for this project?
Oh, I don't know.
Nothing
deliberate? Just the fact that whenever I talk about movies with people, there's always like, oh, it's like this meets this meets this.
Yeah.
You know?
So, well, we've also been like, we're subject to the... I don't know if anyone's in the industry, but this has even gone beyond the industry. It's like we always hear about this elevator pitch where it's like, if you walk into an elevator with Steven Spielberg, you better tell him your movie in like one line. And it's always like, you know, Harry Met Sally meets, you know, the Terminator or whatever. And it's like, and we really stop our creativity thinking in those terms.
Right.
I'm proud to have movies that it's difficult to sum up in one sentence.
Right. That's when a movie can't be mixed together like that, that's when you get something like really interesting, although usually there's something, you know what I mean?
Oh,
I,
always.
Yeah,
always,
there's always something that you could like, you know, dig down and find.
I just kind of hate doing it though.
Yeah.
Like I do it, I have to do it. I mean, no one's gonna read a 10 sentence synopsis. It's just not gonna happen.
Right.
So you have to do that, and it's just, you know, it's out of necessity, but it does kill the soul a little bit when you're like, how does this idea, which I think is so original, of course it's not,
right,
how do I find four other movies that I could smash it together and it feels like that,
right?
You know, that's just a part of it. But
that's the filmmaker point of view, I think.
Yeah.
Is looking at it that way, because obviously we're reviewing movies in a way here, and so that from that point of view, it's kind of like it makes sense to look at all the different movies that make something up. But then I'd imagine from a filmmaker, it's like, oh, but I was doing this, you know?
Yeah. The thing is, as long as it's unconscious, you know,
you know,
like Stanley Kubrick, one of my favorite people, of course, he was heavily influenced by a French guy named Max Ophuls. Mm-hmm. And you can see direct correlations from Stanley's iconic camera movements from Max.
Yeah.
And so, but on the other hand of that, on the other side of that, Stanley never repeated himself. He was a stylist that he lived in this weird limbo where you could watch 5 seconds of his movie and you could tell it was him. And yet he always surprised you.
Yeah.
He never repeated himself. He never pandered. He is always surprising the audience in some way, shape, or form. He was growing.
Yeah.
But that Max Ophuls, influence was, you know, kind of burned into him.
Sure.
And that's kind of the goal, I think. I think we should just be less impressed with reference.
Sure.
By and large. Like, you know, we watch Quentin Tarantino movies and we're like, oh man, he's watched a lot of obscure movies. Like, that's not impressive anymore. To me anyway, I'm tired of that.
Right.
You know, I'm happy he worked a blockbuster and saw all these obscure films. That's great.
Yeah.
But like, tell me another movie. Give me something else. I want to know more about you as a filmmaker, not you as the fan.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is people will totally disagree with that. Or if they haven't seen the films that have influenced these other films. And so it is a new experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of positivity in that.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like sometimes I'm being extra intense about it and I should kind of relax a little. But again, I'm the only one viewing the movies through my eyes.
So sure.
I can be critical as much as I want.
Well, a big goal of this show from the beginning was to figure out these influences. That way we could make movie recommendations, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get people going back and checking out other movies. And
sure.
So, you know, it definitely works from that point of view, but you know, I could totally picture, like I said, that filmmaker point of view of like trying to describe your own movie and being
right.
Like, you know, that it would feel lazy to describe yourself that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, it does feel like lazy is a good way to put it. You know, we strive so hard to, but then, you know, it's funny at the other end of that. And this is a good argument to make. This is the devil's advocate, which I think is valid to talk about, which is that, you know, all great art is really comes from something else. I mean, all great paintings based on Greek mythology, you know what I mean? Or all epic poems are based on Greek mythology, or that anything I'm writing isn't something that ancient Greeks and ancient Romans didn't write a million times before me.
Yeah.
You know, and so there is that angle of it, I think, but I mean, we're all basically dealing within literary and biblical illusion. Like, that's all we're working within.
Right.
These stories are so well ingrained in our society and in our minds that filmmakers can actually use them to manipulate an audience. They can tell a subliminal story that we're so familiar with on this kind of like molecular level that's, it goes back to Proverbs or whatever it may be, whatever it is. And we can actually communicate in these very subliminal ways. That's what's amazing about movies, is that you can take something that is old as dirt and you can put this unique spin on it, and or tell the story visually where it's only been told in a painting or told in a book, and you can really reinvent it.
Yeah.
So there is an argument to be made that, like, you know, how futile is originality to begin with?
Right.
Extremely.
Yeah.
But, you know, no one's ever written love the way that I'd write it.
Right.
You know, we're all snowflakes.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? We're all different. Yeah. And so we should.
And there's never been an album like my upcoming new album, A Different Kind of Dream.
Exactly. That's the thing. So, yeah, I know. Yeah. Good plug. Yeah. Perfect plug. Hey, this is your show. You should plug whatever you want.
Nailed it.
I got nothing to plug. Nothing's coming.
Oh, we'll get some plugs later. And then you could tell them that you have nothing. But,
okay. You know. Right. But yeah. So that's just something that, like, That's the eternal battle that I'm in with myself, and also as, like, you know, a pseudo movie intellectual, where I just like to lean over next to me, the person next to me, and whisper how disappointed I was, or whatever, you know, or whatever it is. I'd just, you know, it's all crap.
Your friend who was loving Isle of Dogs next to you, and you're just like,
she was as glassy eyed as those dogs. I was like, how did you have this experience? What movie did you watch? I'm just shocked that you can have such, and my thing is, I think she's being the one that's not being objective at all. Like, I don't think I'm being overly harsh. The movie's okay. I don't dislike the movie. It was fine. It was good. I liked it. It was okay. It didn't, like, move me to tears.
Yeah. I think it would be a hard movie to, like, hate.
I don't hate it.
Regardless, I think anybody would at least find some laughs and some joy in it.
There is a lot of value, particularly in its craftsmanship.
Right. Yeah. And how it looks is,
I mean, gorgeous. Absolutely insane. And just then, the technical feat of stop motion.
Yeah.
You know, I believe they shot that film on a 1DX Mark II from Canon. It's still a photography camera, which has amazing video capability, but it's predominantly for still photos.
Right.
And it's because you have, when you're dealing with a real high quality image from a photo, you're working within like 8K, you know, 4K is this big thing right now, but we have 8K when you have a real photo, or if you're doing a Canon 5DR or a 5DSR, you're dealing with 50 megapixels, it's like 12K.
Yeah.
So you have, I mean, just the technical craftsmanship and how you use that technology to tell a very simple, beautiful story. There's a lot to value. And I did value it.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm just a harsher critic for people I actually admire.
That's why I wanted you on this show.
Yeah. I'm harder on people that I think are geniuses.
Sure.
Because it's like, be better.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Entertain me, monkey.
Yeah.
Is, you know.
Oh, perfect transition. My next one. Speaking of monkeys, my next puzzle piece is actually, I don't know, we've never talked about this before, but I don't know if you're fans of these, but they are computer games, actually, not a movie.
Okay.
The Secret of Monkey Island and Maniac Mansion. From LucasArts. You ever play those back in the day?
I have no game experience. Okay. I played Halo one time.
Okay, this is much further back.
Okay.
These are PC games. They're graphic adventures, like where you click on pick up and then you click on the banana and you pick up the banana. And it's a whole story. But these games were famous for being funny and for being very cartoon-like. And the dialogue is like really ridiculous. And a lot of the gags and jokes in this movie very much reminded me of that style of writing. One particular example was the Jeff Goldblum's character always having a a rumor that he was telling, you know,
right.
And it was just like a little recurring bit, you know.
Yeah,
that kind of writing, it totally reminded me of these games were made by this guy Ron Gilbert for LucasArts back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, they're some of my favorite games of all time. So when this
particular style of humor was popping up, I was like, you know, oh, that's great. Like that is totally that. And I don't know if anybody else mentioned that. Like, I haven't seen that in any review or anything like that. It might just be me, but I totally picked up on it.
Yeah, right, no, away. That's cool. I would have never put it together. So right. That's really interesting to think about.
Yeah, I'm curious if anybody else out there that's listening picks up on that at all. But yeah, so the Secret of Monkey Island, Maniac Mansion, those are the main ones, but a lot of that style of game, those old games, they were very silly, dialogue driven and reminded me a lot of that.
Cool.
Do you have another puzzle
piece? I have one final puzzle piece, which Perfect. I don't know if it's cheating.
Okay.
It might be cheating a little, but it's Wes Anderson's own movies.
Okay.
This is the inception of puzzle pieces that we're going to go. I feel like, we've already touched on it, but I feel like he's become a parody of himself in a way. and I think of that, when I think of him now, I think of this like shtick. He has a shtick.
Yeah.
And, it's amusing. But I'm a little bored, and I want earlier, fresher Anderson. But yeah, so I felt like I think Grand Budapest was a turning point for him as a filmmaker, in the sense that it was really a departure from it's gonna sound overly critical, but like the human side of his storytelling ability.
Right.
Because when I look at Grand Budapest, it's hyper stylized. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a really, you know, a lot of great stuff in that film, but it almost became a live action cartoon.
Right.
You know, there's the idea that, you know, Jeff Goldblum's fingers get cut off, and there's even like little animation within it. I think there's just a handful of shots that are actually stop motion.
Yep.
And the blocking of the scene and the posture of the characters and the composition of the shots and the deep depth of field that they use with the lenses, it all kind of looked like this big moving cartoon.
Yeah.
And in a sense, it's a triumph. You know what I mean? If that's what he was going for, totally nailed it. Absolutely incredible. But I felt very unconnected, or not connected, I should say, to the characters, to the story even. And again, it felt like there were those moments where they were kind of injecting sentimentality in the film to kind of give it some blood. They feel kind of, not, again, these are very harsh, dramatic words, but they did feel a little bloodless to me. And so when I see Isle of Dogs, I think it's like the next evolution in this new style of his, which is just like a cranked up version of his old style. It's just like a hyper wooden version.
I totally see what you're saying. And I think it really comes down to whether or not you're okay with that style. Mm-hmm. Because he definitely is going more towards the comedy. He's definitely going more towards, you know, a totally heightened version of his old self.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if something he does soon, like, kind of goes back to something a little more character-based.
Yeah,
more
earthy.
You know, yeah.
When I think of, like, I mean, Bottle Rocket is probably one of the most unique, his very first film, because I don't think he actually had established his voice yet. So it kind of deviates from the whole feel. But starting with Rushmore, I think we can really see the genesis of his movies. They feel like they're part of the same universe, which is great. You know, that's all good. But you know, it's funny, this is total speculation on my part, of course, but you know, whatever. We're living in the age of fake news, and so we can just say whatever we want. It doesn't matter anymore. There's no standards. But I heard a great quote from Angelica Houston, who had worked on Royal Tenenbaums. And after that period of time, he was kind of a nerdy, geeky Texan. You know, he had this kind of straggly look with glasses and didn't really take care of himself. And you can go see photos of him where he just kind of looked like a roughed up collegian. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And and then he personally, the filmmaker Wes Anderson, had a transformation. He started becoming very well dressed and well kempt, and had kind of grew his hair out and became a persona. And here's the speculation part, is that I really think that affected his filmmaking style. I think he styled up, he polished up, and I think his movies have suffered ever since. I think he has this like corduroy suit vibe about him now, and he's conscious of his look and his persona and his identity.
Yeah.
And I think his movies have suffered. I want him to go back to wearing a dirty blue sweater and having a crazy $12 haircut And I think he will make better movies again.
See, I was all getting ready to agree with you, except for I was thinking you were going to say he's turning himself into a Wes Anderson character.
I would have agreed
with you 100% on that.
He really has.
Yeah.
He now occupies his own universe.
Yeah.
You know, and I hear all kinds of weird stories. You know, you hear things, they're public and some behind the scenes stuff that, especially on his stop motion animation films, that he's very negligent as a director, that he directs primarily by iPhone. From like his apartment, and he'll just like tell people what to do and not be very present. And I don't know, like, I'm not sure that's 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. That could totally be a fabrication. I've heard it on more than one occasion. And that kind of sticks in my craw, strangely. It's like, go down there, man. I'm like, what are you doing? You know,
yeah.
I don't know, like, be a part of this. You know, your directorial style is so specific.
Right.
You have such this unique vision that you'd think that there'd be more of a connection even on that level. And I guess that, as if that is true, I'll preface it with that.
Yeah.
That I think it actually comes across. I'm actually feeling that.
I'm curious about that because, yeah, that would be very strange, especially for someone like him who's so very specific. Like, yeah. I wouldn't have thought that of someone like him. But, you know, who knows? It's possible.
I had heard it about the set of Fantastic Mr. Fox, that he did it primarily through FaceTime, that he'd FaceTime some of the puppeteers and things. And he was present, as far as I know, with a lot of the director, a lot of the actors for their vocal performances, which I do think is crucial. And I think he was probably there for that as well. But yeah, there's just something about that. I'm not sure if there's any truth to it or not. But if there is, I don't know. Again, I'm totally projecting that. That's totally my own thing.
Maybe you just got advice from Trey Parker and Matt Stone after they did Team America and they were like, fuck puppets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Never doing this again.
Yeah, which that movie is excellent.
Oh, I love that movie.
That's a superb movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys are excellent.
Oh, my God. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think that brings us to the finished puzzle, which I'm going to read down the list of all the movies and styles that we listed here.
Okay.
So we've got Japanese cinema, of course, including Ozu. And Akira Kurosawa, specifically Deskiden.
Mm-hmm.
Then also Japanese animation, like Howl's Moving Castle and Spirited Away. We also have The Jungle Book, Saturday Morning Cartoons, Secret of Monkey Island, and Maniac Mansion. And also Wes Anderson referencing his own films, the films of Wes Anderson. So that is the final list that we've got here for piecing it together. And just to reiterate, go back to a quick little overview of what we thought of the movie. Clearly I like this one more than you did, but you definitely liked a lot of parts of it. And
I really appreciate it, of course. Like I said, beautiful, a lot of work in it. As an exercise of style, it's a really wonderful continuation of his work.
Sure.
I just simply didn't connect to the story. I thought it was a little benign, a little simple. Didn't laugh as hard as I imagined that I would.
I laughed so much.
That's odd. So funny. That's the thing is like every joke is different for every person, so you can never really. But yeah, there was something about it, just kind of a sterile wooden quality to it that I didn't think connected for me. Didn't land. But I did enjoy it, and I think it's a fun piece of cinema for people to go check out and enjoy the beauty of it.
What did you think of the score?
Oh, let me look. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
The thing is, when you get to this level. Yeah. There's so many great people doing so many good things that you really can only criticize the vision behind
it.
Everyone's so brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, that you can't really be like, oh, that score was junk. You know, it wasn't.
These were the only two, if I remember correctly anyway, the only two of his movies that really had like a lot of score to them. Grand Budapest and this, both Alexander Desplat. But I loved the score quite a bit.
Yeah.
And there's only a couple songs, which is light for a Wes Anderson film.
Yeah, there was actually. That's true.
Yeah.
There was actually a lot more sound design,
yeah.
I think, in this film that I've ever... I mean, there's a lot of sound design always, but this in particular, I think
sure. The
atmosphere in the world was a big part of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I loved it. I think it was kind of his most crowd-pleasing film in a way, despite it being weird and despite... you not being a part of the crowd that was super pleased, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
It's definitely one of, certainly my favorite of his two animated and, one of I don't know, maybe a top fiver for me even. Wow. I really liked it that much.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but hey, I think this movie was kind of made for me. So,
was it like a top five Wes Anderson?
Right.
Okay, not like a top five of all
time. No.
Okay.
But,
I was going to get up and leave.
Yeah, right. No, that would be not quite that. Yeah.
But top five of his films.
Yeah, top five of his films. I think maybe it hovers around number five for me probably.
Wow, what's number one? Is that curious? I'm a list maker. I'm obsessed with lists.
Yeah, I actually was working on a list the other day. I could bring it up, but number one is still Royal Time and Balance.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah. For a long time, it was my favorite movie, like, period.
Period.
My favorite movie is Adaptation, though.
One of my all-time favorites, man. Yeah. One of my all-time favorites.
Right on.
Oh, my God. I'm a big Charlie Kaufman fan.
Awesome.
And that film in particular is masterful.
Oh, so
good. Yeah. So good. It's funny. I'll do a mini plug real quick. I host a free art house cinema in Las Vegas with a woman named Vivian Martin, a friend of mine. It's called Cinema Mondays. It's at the Sci-Fi Center. And it's 8 p.m. It's always free every Monday night. And a couple months ago, we actually showed Royal Tenenbaums, and we had like 30 people show up. And it's funny, I'm always talking about his movies because I kind of obsess over how I want them to be better. And my poor girlfriend has to like listen to that all the time. Mm-hmm. But she actually walked out going like, I kind of see what you mean now. Like, there's so much soul to Royal Tenenbaums. Like, there's the emotions real and the idiosyncrasies of the characters. Like, that's the thing is, like, I think I'm not sure if him as a writer in particular, or just this is like a new motif, but making someone quirky and idiosyncratic doesn't make them like interesting, deep characters.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like, oh, they, you know, Ringo's their favorite Beatle. They must be fascinating. And it's like, no, that's not even close to fascinating. That's just a weird thing about them. So when you look at like a Gene Hackman type character in Royal Tenenbaums, like, there's a real history there. There's like a whole real emotional core to that character that you think is despicable and you think is wonderful and he's magical. And I don't know, to this day, I'll watch it and think that that's like his best output so far.
Oh my God. Yeah. He's so freaking good in that movie.
Yeah. Excellent film.
Just, oh man. Yeah. Wow. Well, so you just kind of did a plug. You got anything else you want to plug before we wrap
this up?
Oh,
is there a whole plug section? Yeah,
we just plug right now, actually.
Okay.
So we're right at the plugs now. So yeah.
Big thing is Cinema Mondays because we really want to open up the film culture to Las Vegas. I know maybe listening to me, you won't believe this, but you don't have to be a movie buff. We're not going to criticize your opinions, I promise. It's a really open, cool environment, totally free. And it's just for people to come and watch movies. Like I said, you don't have to be a buff. You just want to see something cool, see something different. We show films from all over the world from the last 100 years of cinema. And it's a real passion of ours to open it up more to the city. So if you're interested in that, you're always welcome. I'm coming out with a new film. Hopefully there's not many details I can actually share about it. Because I have no idea when the hell it's going to actually come out.
Sure.
So I'm not just being secretive to help fan the fire. I just have no idea.
They're going to the message boards, right?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. They start downloading the script and pass it around and get people interested. No, but so there will be a film at some point between now and the end of time that I have directed.
Awesome.
So keep an eye out, I guess.
I'm looking
forward
to it. Awesome. Well, thank you for being here. I'm glad we finally got you on, and I'm sure we'll be doing it again sometime soon.
I'd love it. Thank you so much. I hope I didn't come off too much like a douchebag.
Oh, you're perfect.
So that was episode 9, Isle of Dogs. And by the way, I love dogs. But that was I know we kind of went back and forth there about the merits of this movie, but I gotta say, this is currently sitting at my number one favorite movie this year so far. It's still early in the year. There's been some great movies, and there's a lot of great movies coming up. But currently that is my number one, and I loved it, and I'm trying to get back to see it hopefully another time this week. It was a fun one to talk about. And we have some more fun ones coming up. We already have an episode for A Quiet Place in the can. That'll be coming to you next week. And by the way, we tried to get this show really rolling by doubling up, doing two episodes a week for a few weeks there. We're probably going to settle back into one a week, at least for the next few weeks. And then, we might jump back into two a week for a while. We'll see how it goes. It really all depends on time and, how many movies I get to see and, you know, what my friends are seeing, and that way we can figure out and schedule more episodes. But we're definitely hoping to do one on Rampage next week as well. That would be coming after that, a Quiet Place one. And then we have a few other movies that I'm hoping to get to, and we're just going to keep it rolling. But yeah, it's going to be one a week for the next few weeks. After that, we might go back to two a week for a while, because it was pretty fun just getting them out there that quickly. But, you know, we gotta work it out time-wise. But again, thank you so much for listening to the show. And we are going to be working on a website to go along with the show soon, so keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, if you're not actually subscribed, please subscribe to our show on whatever your podcast app of choice is, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, we're on there now. Whatever podcast app you like, make sure you subscribe to us. Also, you can follow us on Facebook, Piecing It Together Podcast. Check us out on Twitter and Instagram, at Piecing Pod on both of those. And again, leave us a review, send us some feedback, let us know what you thought of this episode, let us know what you think of the whole show overall. We want to know your feedback, and we will read any questions or comments you have on the show in the future. So please make sure you email us. That's the second week in a row I didn't set my phone to silent. I'm slipping, man. All right. Well, anyway, thank you again. And now that this one's out, I'm actually finishing my new album that I keep talking about this week, A Different Kind of Dream. It's going to be sent in to get pressed up and start getting it distributed everywhere by the end of this week. So you are going to be seeing that soon, and I am going to be promoting that a lot more soon. But this being an episode about dogs, I thought I'd leave you with a special treat. This is one of the songs by a little side project of mine called The Pup Pups, in which I sing songs about my dogs, and in some cases the dogs themselves sing. Yeah, it's a fun, ridiculous project, and I'm going to leave you one of those songs. Why not, right? So enjoy it. This one's called Big Bright Eyes.